So let's start with what questions you do have, and we'll have this recorded for those guys. That anything okay. that you have to.
You know, I have one question that
yeah.
actually is it's a question that my sister asked me when I was talking with her yesterday. Her son is doing gymnastic
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And I, for some reason, I was telling her that whole story about when you injure yourself, that with the body withdrawing from that experience.
Or tree climber.
Yeah. Tree climber? Is that how you guys got in?
Yeah.
That was the first attempt.
They
tried
to shimmy
the
tree. But they opened the door down there, the utility door, and
yeah,
stood on the door and climbed over the thing.
Because, I mean, I'm really glad that you told me that the key was gone.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it. And then you got in that last, okay.
Well, the last week it was open.
It was open. Because usually somebody's here. She's got all
right.
Wednesday afternoon. But
yeah.
she didn't have clients that day.
Well,
yeah.
What happened to the flower pot? Does anybody know what happened to the flower pot or the key?
No.
So the key that you guys gave me is now under the mat.
Yeah, I got
so
that.
You
thank
know,
you.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Appreciate
but
that. Yeah.
Anyway,
all right. So go ahead with your question. We're just starting with some questions and stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
So
and Jody, I was telling these guys that this will be our last day, so not next week. Okay. So you can prepare yourself over the next 4 hours to learn everything you need.
Your separation
yeah.
anxiety.
Yeah.
And all.
Nah. It's okay. All right. So go ahead, Betty. Yes. So
the thing about when you injure yourself and your body kind of withdraws.
Yeah.
It does that thing and how that cuts off the body's ability to heal, so that you want to reenact that for whatever
right.
that act.
Yeah.
That
contact
action.
Assist is what it's actually called. Yeah.
Contact assist.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm telling her that. She said, well, like in Nathan's case, when he's going around parallel bars and
mm-hmm.
he has to kind of loop in and out, sometimes he'll, he's hit his feet on the bars.
Yeah.
And it hurts. And so there's that in his mind that kind of, and she was wondering, is there anything, I mean, is it just a matter of him just continuing that same activity?
Now, because that's done literally on the fly, and you can't
yeah.
you can't do that, and you can't judge a light touch and all that kind of
right.
stuff.
Right.
But what he can do, okay, is he can actually sit himself down, even with a table like this, and then touch his feet under the table just the way he hits them on the bar there. Okay.
Or
you can get a bar, or you can take a lower bar, because almost all of the gymnastics places have, lower
right.
bars or,
right.
one laying down.
But
you know.
He's reenacting it in a different...
Yeah. So he can get his body in semi the same position. He can stretch out.
And kind of like...
And it doesn't have to do it hard. He just needs to touch it lightly. It really is just to touch it lightly.
Okay.
Because what that does is that'll actually... He'll know, because if he still has stuff that's re-stimulated, that'll actually bring up his sensation, his emotion, his and even the feeling of pain or whatever. And you just do it until it's no big deal, and so you can kind of flip it and hit it a little, and no big deal. Okay, great,
yeah.
It's done.
So
but
it's
you start off, but a light touch in as close an approximation of the actual occurrence as possible.
Okay,
the reason light touch is because usually, again, if it's got stuff stored in there, if there's re-stimulation, if you go up and smack it again, even though it's lighter than when you hurt it, it's going to hurt 10 times as
right,
much.
Right.
And it just locks it in more.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So
you want to just sneak up and de-stimulate it.
And even if he's just sitting or like...
Yeah, so what he does...
His legs are swinging around, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. But that's okay. I mean, so he knows, are his legs straight, are they bent?
Straight.
That's my guess, see? And so he can approximate
that
and then just do it with anything or with even a bar there.
Yep.
And have him do the stress release points, either the ring finger and thumb and stress release or just a hand on the forehead while he's doing that, because what that does, or the frontal occipital, because what that does is that helps to erase the stress on it, and the stress response.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a version of the postural stress release, yeah.
Oh.
And we didn't talk about that specifically, I don't think, but postural stress release, so let me tell you about that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Graham. That's why it helps here.
Yeah.
Postural stress release is where you actually... The best example in the world is a lot of people have built up some accumulated stress from being in a dentist's office.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And if you muscle test somebody who's done a lot of dental work and have them just put their head back and open their mouth wide and muscle test them, it'll stress right out. Because they assume the posture of a previously stressful or a repeatedly stressful circumstance.
Yep.
So what you do then to clear that, it's all written in the book there, it's real simple,
cool.
But you first get an emotion on it.
Yeah.
Okay, just come back to neutral, get the emotion. And then you assume the posture of whatever it is, do stress release while they actually visualize or while they just hold the posture. Now, with a dentist office, you see, I've been in enough dentist office, you can have a lot of fun, you know. And you can be talking to the person like the dentist. You know, okay, open wide, I'll hold your mouth a little while. You know, I mean, you can play with it and all of that. But you just do it until you can actually test that posture and it's not stressful anymore.
So kind of, so you're kind of play acting, being in the dentist's office.
Yeah,
like
you can do that,
person.
But what you want to do, postural stress release, in it, that's when you can play act. Postural
right.
stress release in its most basic is you just
take
find the posture. And by the way, so let's say somebody actually fell down, and this happens a lot. Somebody fell down, knocked themselves unconscious.
Uh-huh.
All right? And now they're having trouble sleeping. Well, guess why? Because laying down
mm-hmm.
and going unconscious is very scary and stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't want to lay down without, they can't lay down without stress, and they can't go unconscious, they can't sleep without bringing up anxiety. So what you do is, good afternoon. What you do is you have them, again, assume whatever the position was. So if they fell down backwards, hit their head, you know, even if they weren't totally unconscious, you have them literally laid down on the floor with their head back and muscle test them, and it'll be stressful. Or lay down on the table, but the floor is better because that's where they were,
right,
see?
Right.
And if they fell and hit the front of their head, you have them lay down, you know, there and test them. So you find whatever posture is associated with a trauma, and you check it. And if that posture itself has stress when you muscle test
mm-hmm,
it,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
then you want to get an emotion and
right.
then just do stress release while they hold that posture until they can hold it without any stress on it.
Cool.
So that's postural stress release. Thanks,
cool.
Graham, for bringing that up. Yeah.
Good.
So that's a
is
little...
Is that the big one or the little one? Doesn't matter.
In the big one,
I
think. It's in the big one. Yeah. Yeah, everything's in the big one. Yeah, I don't think postural stress is in the little one, but yeah. Yeah. So that's where that contact assist sort of blends with the postural stress release, because you're doing the activity or the action kind of lightly duplicating that created the pain or the injury while you're de-stressing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And awesome. Then you want to go on to have them visualize it in a different way?
No, you don't need to do that.
Oh, okay,
that's
where I was confused. With
no.
Having a good time.
No. You don't have to do that. For the gymnastics, you know, so like, he can, by the way. Here's another use of stress release, okay? And that is, he can visualize doing his routine while he does his frontal occipital or ESR or whatever it is. And the reason for that is that it will bring up, while he visualizes the routine, it'll bring up any of the places that he has fear, that he has doubt, that he has a bad picture in his brain. You
right.
know, and you can find out real quickly if you want a muscle test by muscle testing and having him literally go through and, you know, first step, second,
right.
you just test, all you found, so you know where the weak link is in there. Or you can just have him visualize his routine and test him, and if it has weakness in it, then the whole thing is stressful. And then you just have him go through and replay it a bunch of times. And I like, by the way, to replay it verbally. In other words, have him talk about it. And that's hard to do sometimes with a physical activity, you know,
mm-hmm.
because,
mm-hmm.
okay, then I do this move. But
right.
but they know what the move is. They know what it is, you know.
They're
I mean, it keeps them connected with the activity by having to vocalize, to having to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps them really intimately connected with it, where sometimes when we visualize an activity, we kind of skim.
Mm-hmm.
And we automatically, of course, we'll skim by the things that we don't like, and we don't know that there's something in there that was stressful.
How far, break it down, like the name, for instance, of a piece?
Sure.
Muscle test on sort of each piece, and then when you have a piece, then try to break it down even to more fragments?
No, you don't need to go that far. You know, I talked about, like, breaking it down, you know, as you go through. So you could go step first, I do this, next I do this. You could find out what step it is. But ultimately, you still want to have him be able to go through the whole routine without stress. So it's sometimes valuable to know, here's the step that, oh yeah, that one I always have trouble with, you know. Well, let's work on that. But let's put it in the context, ultimately, of the whole routine. So when you're done, you want to be able to visualize the whole activity, muscle test, and have it be strong.
But to help work it through, do it in.
Yeah. If you've got a segmented activity, you certainly can look at a piece at a time.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, great, I get the loop just fine, but, you know, transferring from the high bar to the low bar, you know, that's when I screw up. Great, let's look at this. The loop's good. That transfer. Now you got it. There's some stress, so now let's get the picture and clean it up. And then you do the whole routine. So this is also really helpful, by the way, when you are anticipating something in a way that's less than positive. You've got a big meeting or a confrontation or an explanation or a presentation or a test or, you've got something coming, you know, you've got your family is coming to visit, or, you know, it's like whatever it is, you've got something coming up in the future. When you think about it, if it's stressful when you think about it, what you want to do is you want to do your frontal occipital holding or the ring finger and thumb, the emotional stress release, while you visualize that event the way you want it to be. So you're actually practicing seeing it the way you want it to be. And you're de-stressing. And what happens then is when you come up to the event, your brain has had plenty of rehearsal time. So when you find yourself like face to face with that person or sitting down at the desk with your pen ready to take it, you've seen that 1,000 times already and de-stressed that. So the immediate response isn't freeze. The immediate response is, okay, breathe, we'll just keep moving through. And so that is a way to do like rehearsal. It's the same way, by the way, that you can do stress release for the past. So let's say you have an event in your past that haunts you, you know, that you think about from time to time, or it just kind of gets re-stimulated every time you see that kind of a person or you hear that noise, or, you know, you can actually go back, stress release, get the emotion, all right, but do stress release and go through that event. Now, mostly those events that give us trouble, give us trouble because they weren't fun in the first place. So there's a case, Jody, where you do want to go through and kind of look at the event, and then you want to see it from different perspectives. So if there are two people involved, it's sort of like, you know, there are times when, I know, you've had an argument with somebody, and then there comes a time sometime in the future when you both literally laugh about it and say, that was really stupid, wasn't it? You know, and so you want to kind of get through that the rough part, and then you need to see it from another perspective. You need to see it from a bigger picture. Hey, overall, this is no big deal. You know, or let me see it from that person's perspective. Boy, I looked really silly, didn't I? You know, and let me see it from the perspective of fly on the wall. I mean, here's these two people doing this funny stuff. You know, it's like it helps you change your personal stuckness in that. So doing your stress release while you visualize it the way it was, maybe the way you would like it to be, or seeing it from different perspectives, or finding a way to interpret it, or to even, I'll say, rationalize it in your mind, you know. Not justify it, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not about right or wrong. This is about coming to peace.
Yep. So it's new context, new perspective.
Yes.
Different.
Yeah, so you somehow don't see it from... See, the reason we have stress on a past event is we see it from one perspective.
Oh, my God.
We see, you know, that person's face head on right in front of our face, this close to us. Mm-hmm. If you see it from another perspective, like if you walk around in your mind's eye from behind them and look at you in front of them and see the back of their head. You know, if you see it from above, if you go back 100 yards and look at it, you know, it's all of that's just giving you a different, broader perspective so it doesn't become so locked into the stress. Because all those other perspectives have a whole lot less or zero stress on them. Because you weren't there. You didn't see it. You didn't experience it from that perspective. So lots and lots of uses for emotional stress release. For the past, for the present, for the future. And again, for physical stuff, for postural stress release, for things like that. Remember, all of these stress release points does is it helps to bring your consciousness, bring your blood flow, your energy, and your consciousness to the front part of your brain, which is more rational, more logical, a little more detached. It moves your energy out of the back part of your brain, that reptilian brain that's really fight, flight, you know, emotional reaction, all of that. So you move up into the more conscious choice part of the brain. So what you're doing is you're just, by holding these points, it actually moves that energy forward so that you can literally erase the stress on it. So anything that has stress on it, you can do these points with it.
I mean, guilt, blame, regret.
You bet. You choose it. I mean, if it's there, you go through and find a way to see it differently. Find a way so that you can actually.
I'm gonna live the next 3 months of my life like this.
Yeah. I think they ought to have these little patches we could put on here. You know.
Yeah. Never mind the third eye. We'll
yeah.
Have
right.
All
right. 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 Yeah. Yeah, have all three. That'll be really good. That'll be really good.
New perspective here.
Yeah.
Emotional race here.
So yeah, try it. See, experiment. That's the key with all of this, by the way, guys. What's going to make all of this energetic life balancing, touch for health stuff yours, really yours, is for you to experiment and say, well, what if I did this for that? You know, a couple of the techniques that we currently use came solely because somebody got confused about what their homework does. Yeah, I was doing this and this and this, just like you said. I said, well, I didn't say that, but it worked, huh? Well, that makes some sense. Oh, okay. You know, because, you know, inside we really know. See, that's where the whole muscle testing kinesiology stuff comes down to. All we're doing is we're actually accessing what we already know inside. So if I'm muscle testing you, I'm accessing your inner knowing, your inner wisdom. If I'm muscle testing myself, I'm getting at that part of myself that really knows and what I know. And so, sure, mistakes a lot of times are just people saying, this is what I know needs to be done. And that's why anything will heal anything. It doesn't really matter. So experiment. Try things out. Try some combinations and see what works and what doesn't work. And yes, there's always the placebo effect, which means if you believe it'll work, which I don't have any problem at all with the placebo effect. I had one person one time say that all healing is placebo effect. Because what's happening is you're believing whatever you're doing is making a difference in your life. You've given your self-healing power into the form or the activity of something outside, and you're allowing that to be a healing agent for you. But in a very, very big way, that's all placebo effect is. Say, I believe this is going to work, so it works. You know, that's why you can go to one doctor and you don't believe in that doctor and what he does doesn't work. You go to another doctor and you have a relationship and you believe that person really understands you. Ah, here, this is going to make a difference. They can do exactly the same thing, and it can be totally successful. So it's about relationship. Because that's what helps people be at peace and believe. And so don't ever, I wouldn't ever poo-poo the placebo effect. I'd use it to the max. Yeah. And that's why homework's fun, by the way. And you notice a lot of the stuff has homework. Partly because our mind, you know, it's not like just turning a switch. We can't go, oh, great, the light's off, let's turn it on. You know, sometimes we actually have to change the bulb or rewire, you know. So homework is really good from that point of view, repetitive, you know, embedding a new pattern in there to, you know, move out the old pattern. But homework is also good because it gives the person something to do. And if they believe in that, then what they're doing is they're actually affirming, I'm doing something positive for myself. I'm making a difference in my own life right now. And that's really, really valuable.
Positive affirmation.
Yeah.
It's another way of affirmation.
Yeah, and by the way, if there's no other homework, the simplest and probably one of the most effective homeworks that you can give somebody is this. Tell them over the next 2 days to just notice as many instances of any kind of a beneficial change, no matter how big or how small, and just kind of make a mental note. And that means, by the way, it means, you know, if you notice that, you know, usually it takes you 45 minutes to recover from, you know, a meeting with so-and-so and it only took you 20, that's a huge improvement, okay? And if you notice that usually you wake up kind of slow and you woke up really alert this morning, that's a big difference. And what you're doing is you're telling the person, notice all the good things in your life. Notice all the things that you want to have working well in your life. Find evidence for those things And once they do, the more they pay attention to it, the more it expands in their life. So just from setting the goal and knowing what the person wants to accomplish and what they want to experience, you actually have perfect homework to send them home with, which is basically notice any evidence that you notice that shows you that there's some little bit of progress toward what you want to experience. And I always make sure that it's the tiniest little thing. Don't wait for big breakthroughs. It's little bits. And sometimes there are huge breakthroughs. And a lot of times people are so busy looking for the big stuff, they don't notice all the little things. Had a guy come in, and I mean, it's really pretty funny. I remember things when I need to remember things, but his issue, I mean, he had lots of family issues, but he had lots of issues with his mother, you know, and we balanced over periods, I don't know, four or five balances, and, you know, so how you doing? Oh, the stuff with my mom is up again. Well, so what's going on? You know, it's the same old stuff. And I said, well, so describe it for me. So how's it showing up? You know, and he describes this, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, okay. And he says, you know, the same old stuff. And I'm going back on my head and going, yeah, but when you described it the first time, it was A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Had nothing to do with these. That stuff is not an issue now. It's a whole other layer of stuff. And we think it's the same old stuff because it's the same person or the same trigger. So it's really, really good when people generalize that you have them be very specific about how they are experiencing this, because then they can tell you how they want to experience it. And that way it keeps them from lumping it and categorizing. Yeah, okay, so that's all of the external philosophy and stuff. I will share one fun thing yesterday. I did do a balancing yesterday afternoon. And we were ending up by doing the habitual half dozen to show her how to do those for her homework and stuff. And she's doing her cross crawl and stuff, and she does this, and there was a mirror on the wall in the other room, and she just caught a glimpse of herself in the mirror. She said, wow, I'm really standing up straighter, aren't I? You know, I usually walk around like this, and I just noticed I'm standing up straight. So,
yay.
You know, I mean, not on her list of things, but it's something she noticed. So, giving homework to notice any little nice change is really, really good. Okay, so that's all my sidetrack for this one. Other questions and stuff that came up? Yeah.
I had a few. I can segue off of the ESR or the homework topic.
Great. Either one. Go for it. We'll do them both.
On one of these priority lists, one of the items just says emotional stress relief. And so I'm wondering, does that mean just sit there like this and have them think about their goal?
Well, so when it just says emotional stress release, it means what you want to do is you want to identify an area of stress in their life, which might be their goal, by the way. And I wouldn't just automatically assume that.
Uh-huh.
So I would say, okay, great, so emotional stress release. So apparently there's some area of your life that's causing you some stress.
You
want to lift?
Barometer.
Yeah, you could, but it's really better for them to identify the area of their life. So, yeah, you want a list? Yeah, give me the list. And then what you do, guys, is you put in the priority mode and you test the list. And you find out which thing needs some emotional stress release. And if you don't know, you can also put in your priority mode and you can say, well, let's just check this out. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, financially, relationship. And see which one has stress, which one's the priority. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's obviously something in relationship. Oh, well, if that's the case, it's really this one right here. Great. So then you get to play with emotional stress release. And you get to have them relive it, visualize it, practice it, any of the things we've talked about with emotional stress release. So it's an invitation to open a door to some specific application of emotional stress release. And it may actually be a chunk that came up internally in the process of the balancing that doesn't look like it's even related to the goal.
Okay.
So I don't ever assume we're going to go right back and de-stress the goal. This whole balancing is about de-stressing the goal, and this emotional stress release may be a particular piece that the emotional stress release is the way that you can balance this little chunk that'll help clear the goal.
That's really an invitation to press further.
You bet. Explore just a little bit. And you do it in conversation with them, and if they're kind of blank, you know, then you can do, you know, again, priority mode, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, financial, relationship, you know, and see where the stress is and use that as an opening. And if they have a long list, Great. Take their long list and then do priority mode and find out which one it is. And like any other clearing, by the way, when you do priority mode before you leave, so you de-stress some incident. You know, they had something on the freeway that really upset them and they were stuck with it. Okay, so you de-stress all of that. Then you go back through their list and see, you know, go down and see if there's another priority, because there might be several things in here. Or the same thing if you went through physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, financial relationship, and you found one area, you did something, you go back through, so let's just check, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, financial relationship, you know, that's all clear, great, we go on to something else, but if there's another area, we find another thing to de-stress. So it's opening a door to use emotional stress release as a primary tool for this part of the balancing.
Could you still get a barometer of emotion?
Yes, absolutely.
On the whole process of get of ESR, but then just not use it for, you know, this is what we're thinking about.
Like when you get, so ESR comes up, you can get an emotion
on
the fact that it came up. And by the way, you can get a specific emotion on the incident that comes up that they bring up that you end up, you know, wanting to clear. But like any time we get emotions on any little process, any little piece, you don't have to use that emotion as the focus. It's just notice, which helps to take a lock off of that, make it easier to access.
So about the homework,
mm-hmm.
then, what are your thoughts on multiple overlapping sets of homework? Keep getting a balance sheet or two here every week, and then like doing stuff on my own, and I collect all these pieces of paper that I'm sort of always in the middle of, like with different goals and.
So here's where I am on that. Okay, I'm happy enough if you're getting regular balancing so that you do your homework until your next balancing. And then if you have homework from that balancing, then you do it. And you can always check on that balancing, check yourself or have somebody else check you. It's appropriate to keep working with these other statements or with brain balance from last week or with, you know, limiting emotional patterns that we did yesterday or, you know, whatever. So you can see if you need to do those as well. But what happens...
That priority too.
Yeah, you don't need to. You can just do that with a statement. It's appropriate to keep working with it.
Okay.
Yeah. Not do we keep working with these, but it's appropriate to keep working with
these. There isn't really a list there. It's either appropriate or not.
Yeah, because here's the way I look at it, all right? And then lots of people, by the way, don't like homework. And that's just fine. Even just setting up homework, whether they do it or whether they don't do it, it actually puts that into their system, and so there's some intention and there's some activity there.
Because I'm more inclined to just keep it all.
Yeah. But here's what happens, okay? So you do homework for a day and it's set for a week and you get another balancing, okay? And you have new homework for that balancing. Well, when you get that balancing today, whatever is unresolved from yesterday will get approached from a different angle today.
Even if they're like completely different goals?
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference because whatever is still in process is always up. So even if they're different goals, you know, they're not so different that they're not part of your life. And they're not so different that you know, it doesn't, you know, it comes up today and this one came up yesterday or 2 days ago. You know, I mean, we got to look at a little bigger perspective. And so it's kind of, I see it like chipping away. And I'll take a little from this side and a little from that side and a little from that side. We don't have to do the whole front of the, if we look at a making a statue, we don't have to, you know, chip out the whole face before we work around to the back. We can chip all the way around and get pieces. So, anyway, play with whatever metaphors you want. But yeah, don't get overloaded. I do, by the way, tell people who I see for several sessions a week or two apart, you know, to hang on to their homework sheets, because sometimes somebody will go, you know what, God, I had this piece of homework and it really helped and I've got this going on again. They can thumb back through and pull out an old piece, okay?
Yeah, already.
Yeah, you got a stack. Yeah, going to a whole research mode here. So some people like to keep them, and sometimes I'll tell them, just hang on to them. And by the way, the other way you do it, and this is what I do if I'm seeing somebody like, you know, I saw them today, I'll see them next week, that kind of a thing. You can have them bring the homework sheet back in, and you can have them test. So if it's statements, you have them make the statements, make sure there's no stress on the statement. So before you even do the balancing, you can see that the homework is done or that it's done what it needs to do. Okay.
So they don't feel like they're getting a pop quiz.
Yeah, right.
Did you study?
Yeah, right. And the deal is, again, there are some people who just don't like homework, or they come in all apologetic, oh, gosh, I didn't do my homework. I only did it one day or twice. You know, it's got to be, that's okay. You know, so let's just check it. And you can check it, and you can find out, so we need to continue doing this, for how long, how many times a day, all of that. So use it, you know, bring the sheets back in, check them again, or check them for yourself, if you've got yours, and just see. But mostly, you know, it's just fine to set it aside, do a whole new balancing, take whatever comes up and move ahead from there. And if you really want to know about it, then just, you know, check to see if it's appropriate to keep working on the old homework. Mostly it all begins to integrate in it. Remember I told you that Betty Lou and I balance each other every single day for like 3 months. A full ELB balancing. And so how long did we do homework? You know, one day, thank you very much. I guess I ought to say there's one other piece too. I have an intention that whatever I do is enough.
Mm. Yes.
Okay?
Yes. Yes. Would you like that chorus?
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to share that intention.
Good.
With anybody that I work with. And so they come and say, you know, I only did my homework only 3 times, you know. You know what? I totally trust that you did with exactly what was appropriate for you. And I want them to trust themselves. And so it's really a great way to affirm ourselves. And you know this whole time, space, matter, energy, space, and time. You know, that it's all just made up anyway, you know. And so great, so do this, you know, twice a day for 10 days. I mean, terrific. You know, that keeps my mind engaged. That actually gives me something to do when I forget. That actually gives me some way to interrupt the old limiting patterns that I sometimes fall into. But I can do this once and have it be done if I'm really clear on that. So homework is great for the personality, for the ego. It's great to help again, interrupt patterns, give us something to do to break us out of our old routines, change our habits, things like that. But don't get hung up on, you know, there's really a formula that works.
I've just been doing it a couple of times.
Yeah. You make a rule. It's kind of like, okay, I'll only keep, you know, the last 3 homework sheets active, so I'll just drop, no matter when the next balance is, I'll drop off the 4th one on the list, so I'll have... Yeah, so set a limit for yourself. Yeah. So other check-ins, questions, catch-ups. We're just looking at things that need a little reviewing.
I still have more.
Huh?
I still have more.
Keep going.
So
for everybody.
When you're doing the finger modes, and you hit one of the things that you don't know how to do.
Yeah.
And you put it in circuit.
Yeah.
Figure out what else will clear it. How long do you hold that circuit? Just long enough to find what the other thing is, or throughout actually doing that other thing?
Throughout doing the other thing. And it's okay.
So that's hard, because if you're doing like the foot thing, then you can't move.
Yeah, but then you have this guy here. Okay. So let's say that I muscle test and I put it in circuit. And then I'm going, oh, you know, so we find something. Okay, great. You know, and I, you know, well, I need my notes. Okay, great. I can do that.
I'm going to do that before you move your feet, and since you already have it.
As I move my feet, I'm pouring it from one container into the other.
Oh, as, okay.
Yeah. And I can do that really subtly, and people don't even notice that. Now I've got it in circuit right up here.
Okay.
Now what happens is I go through, so I had a weak indicator in circuit because I had some point that was weak.
Uh-huh.
I put it in circuit, and now I'm looking through and I'm saying, well, what's going to make this strong, right?
Okay.
See, that's what you have to remember. When you put something in the circuit, if you put a weak indicator in circuit, you've got to find what makes it strong. So now you find a point on there that makes it strong. You do everything for that point. You're still holding the circuit. You muscle test them, almost always the basic indicator muscle is now strong, which means that thing that you did cleared up at least the bulk of the stress for that, okay? Now, so I want to tell you that when you do something, anything at all, it'll make your basic indicator, what you have in circuit, it'll make that strong. But I don't stop there, because I still don't know whether one thing is enough to totally clear up that mystery item. So I'm still holding this circuit. I go back through the fingers. I've got a strong indicator. Now I still need to know, is there anything stressful? Find out, clear that up. Until everything goes through clear, then I can close the circuit or zip down or whatever I do. And now I'm back into the rest of my finger mode balance. So we took an excursion because I found a point that I didn't know. So that point was weak. I put it in circuit. So now I'm away from my priority mode balancing, my finger mode balancing, you know, the overall balance. I'm in one little segment trying to find out about this mystery item here. So I find some finger that makes it strong. I find some point on that finger that makes it strong. I work that point. Do whatever it says to do. Then I probably now have a strong indicator. But I'm still holding my circuit. I'm still on this little tangent over here. Now I run through my strong indicator muscle, find any finger mode that goes weak, correct that, and keep doing that until everything is clear, because it might take two or three things to clean up the one mystery item.
And would you be checking all these as finger modes, or would you go all the way back to the top?
No, I need to check them as finger modes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just doing it as finger modes. Because I'm doing a finger mode balancing, that's why. Yeah. But once I get finger modes all clear on this little side thing here, then I can drop my circuit, zip it down, whatever I'm doing. Now I'm back into my finger mode balance.
And you would double check that whatever the original
whatever the
was,
mystery it, point was is clear.
It's clear this
yeah.
way also, and then
yeah.
start back up.
And then
top.
Start back up. Yeah. So it. And by the way, Graham, yes, you could take a whole other tangent, do a whole balancing on this mystery point. But the truth is, if you're doing a finger mode balance, stay with the finger mode.
Yeah.
Or go down some list of things that you know really clearly.
Well, that's what the priority list is.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So you could choose something else. That's fine. But
because all this stuff is in the finger mode.
It's all in the finger
mode.
Yeah. In one way or another, it's in there. Yeah. So anyway, that's just about you hold the circuit until you're done, until everything is clear. Then you dump the circuit and then go back to the balancing wherever you were before.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay.
And then we spent a while the first review session debating the truth and stress statements and figuring out the difference. Jody and I started out like the next time when we were the only ones here at the beginning.
The truth statements and the
truth statements and stress statements, which sound the same but are actually very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the stress statements. So the truth statements, I found a couple lists of them that you can use in the big book. So I just.
Yeah.
This page got really messy. And the stress statements, though, those are the ones that you just sort of make up
yep.
on the fly.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if there's like a good sort of system for generating such statements.
Yeah.
So like I copped a few from like the habits and addictions thing and whatever where
yeah.
they had like really easy substitute in words from your goal or the emotion
yeah.
that you got or something.
So stress statements, let's go back there for a minute. Stress statements comes up as an item on your list, okay? Stress statements is where you have the person make a statement that should be true or that you want to have be true. And you're going to test double pectoralis major, clavicular, ring finger to thumb, test them like that. And see if they're stressed on one side or the other. Okay? We want to make sure that their whole brain is de-stressed on this positive statement. So what Graham's really asking, okay, and by the way, if it's not, if only one side is weak, you say the statement one time, bringing your hands together and in to integrate, retest it. If both sides are weak, you do emotional stress release points and eye rotations while you say the statement a bunch of times. So the stress statements are like an affirmation. Okay? That's related somehow to your goal. So Graham's question is there some like repository of these wonderful stress statement choices? And that's a hard one for me. I'm not real good at that, and there's not. So what happens is you kind of need to look at or be with the whole balancing process. But really good things, there's some generic areas, like I totally trust myself. Okay? You know, I can do this. You know, I know what I want and I go for it. You know, you could use some of the.
I was thinking that if you, since you would have gotten a an emotion on this, or at least on the goal. You felt a substitution, like I feel positive emotion when I goal.
Yeah, but that,
like
that then becomes a process, okay? So it's more than just a stress statement. So what you want is you want to look at anything. Here's how I'd say this. For a stress statement, you want to look at anything that should be true or you would really like to be true to support their goal working. Okay? And this is not a process. This is really just about getting, de-stressing that one statement. That's why it's different than the truth statements, which is a whole process of kind of reprogramming the brain, and that's different. This is actually just de-stressing. Yeah, so it's a different process. So you're going to just need to look at, another way to do it is what could I be believing, or what would I need to believe in order to have this goal be good? What would I need to believe in order to have things work better in my life? So they're a lot of times fairly, well, I was going to say fairly global, but they can get very, very specific. You know, I respect myself in the presence of Fred, you know? Well, I don't stress on that. Okay, that'd be helpful to do, so we do that one, you know. So I can't help you a lot with that because it's not my strong suit. Betty Lou can rattle them off a mile a minute, and they're a lot easier in context, of course, in the context of the balancing, because you just look at all the areas of potential confusion, internal confusion or conflict they might be having. So, sorry, that's not...
sit down with Faye Lou and have her rattle them up while we write them down.
Yeah.
Because what I was doing, I was just making a list that's like, you know, I trust my ability to dot, dot, dot. So I have things I can look at and really easily substitute things in, so I'm not trying to figure this out on the fly with the person's arms up in the air and and trying to do all this at once.
So which ones do you have? Read them off.
So I trust my ability to blah, blah, blah. I'm willing to blah, blah. I deserve to. Such and such is fun, safe, and easy.
Yeah.
I took out the feeling such and such when. I'm willing to change my thoughts, feelings, behavior regarding.
Okay.
That was another one from the.
Yeah. It's safe to. I know you have fun, safe, and easy, but it's safe. It's safe to be rich. It's safe to be thin. It's safe to be happy. It's safe to, you know, but people don't always know that.
And then what?
I deserve to.
Yeah, I got deserve.
Okay.
And what you were just saying, I respect myself in situation.
Right. In yeah, exactly.
That's all I have.
Okay. Any other thoughts, by the way, guys? Anybody have any to add to the list since he's collecting?
Trust.
Trust, yeah. So I trust myself. I trust. You know, it's interesting, by the way, you don't want to do, you know, trusting somebody else because that's not necessarily, but you can do I'm willing to trust because at least if they have, they're de-stressed on that, that helps. But trusting yourself, trusting, you know, God, Spirit, the universe, whatever they believe in, you know, trusting that you're provided for, trusting that all things work. It's not directly, so I wouldn't, because that's usually a negative, but it's really not, it doesn't have to be an affirmation. So obstacles meaning like what? Give me an example of.
I'm just thinking of somebody who. Going through kind of a routine about every time I do this, something goes wrong.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
Something in again.
I
have limited the ability to.
Yeah. So what you can do is, you know, you can de-stress. You know, I'm able to do this, or it's possible to do this. You know. I can figure this out. You know. I mean, it's sort of like it gets them off of that hopeless, stuck, this is just the way it is thing.
Yes.
And those kinds of things, if they're really big, you're going to get into personality traits or you're going to get into truth statements. And by the way, the difference between personality traits and truth statements, I'll just tell you, because those two are related, okay? Personality traits is a limiting belief that we have locked in about ourselves. And so it's something that we consider part of who we are that limits us, that really is not a nice thing. Okay? So if you hear people saying, I'm always doing that, or, you know, God, there it goes again, it, you know, life just sucks. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, That always happens
never
to me.
Never in the always.
Yeah. Those, and that, and that's really clearly a personality trait. Okay? You know, oh man, how stupid I'm, you know, like that. So personality traits, I'm stupid. Okay? Now, a truth statement comes at it from another perspective. The truth statement says, what do I want to believe about myself? Or what do I want to believe, or what do I want to know is true about this circumstance or this situation? But that I can't get it locked in. Okay? So here we're not saying that there's a limiting belief that I've got to get beyond before I can have a positive belief. We're saying there's a positive belief here, something that I really believe is true or I want to have be true, that I can't hang on to. So we're going to soften it up a little bit, okay? Because there's usually some emotional lock in there that keeps us from getting too close to that. So that's the difference. So personality traits is starting off with a limiting belief and working and undoing that. It's something usually that's been programmed really deep and unconsciously in us, okay? And personality traits is working out with a desired working. Starting out with a desired positive belief that we just can't quite get locked in. You know, I know it, but I don't act like it. You know, I believe it sometimes, but not all the time. I wish I was more consistent about this. Okay, good. You know, that we can use a personality trait with. So those two are related in that way. It's sort of like the positive and negative approach, if you will. Depends on where a person is on the continuum. If they're stuck in the negative, you do a personality trait. If they're struggling with the positive, you do a truth statement. Okay, so go ahead, Graham.
I think that's it for me.
Okay. That was all a nice diversion. Didn't get any more stress statements for you, but I'll see what I can do.
Thank you.
All right, other questions, review pieces, things that came up for you guys? Oh, and I told everybody a couple of times, but I didn't, I mean, as we came in, we're not meeting next week, so this will be our last time together, okay?
Oh.
And so, I mean, obviously I'm not just spring off the planet, so you can still find me and ask questions and stuff, but I just wanted to say that. That's, yeah. I'm taking care of me and my schedules when I'm actually doing that, that's the truth, so. Okay, so we'll see what other things come up today. But there are some, on my training checklist here, there's some of the other category that we had left out that I wanna go through. And the first piece I want to do is diet and weight. And let's see if I have that. It ought to be in there. The diet and weight is actually, it's one of the things on the checklist there. It's really a workshop, or it's the pieces out of a workshop. Oh, great, Robert. Do I not have it in here? Did anybody find it? I'm so organized. Okay. All right, I know it's okay.
I'm not sure
it's in it. Okay. So the bottom line is, I know it's in the big book, and the piece that and don't worry about looking it up right now, because you can look at, there's lots of little processes in there, lots of little educational pieces. The reason I have this in here is because I want to go over with you the hypothalamic resets, because one of the pieces that's valuable, we talked about hypothalamus before. As the regulating gland in the body, okay, it's kind of like the mechanical room that has all the dials, gauges, and switches, and thermostats, and everything else for everything that we do and think and are and say and all that kind of stuff, okay. So, what happens a lot of times with diet and weight is that you find people who are stuck. They're like plateaued, and they're clearly overweight or clearly underweight, by the way. So I want to just tell you, this works both ways. But they're clearly, let's do for the moment, because most of our culture worries about being overweight rather than underweight. So somebody's clearly overweight, you know, and they really want to do something about it, and you're balancing them and all that kind of stuff. But diet and weight comes up. Okay, great, that's no-brainer. But one of the things that happens a lot of times is, let's say the person, you know, let's just make it all up. Let's say the person weighs 200 pounds, and they really ought to weigh about 150. I mean, they're way overweight, okay? But they weigh 200 pounds, and they've lost a bunch of weight, but that's it. They can't get below that 200-pound barrier. The hypothalamic resets sometimes will help. It's not a cure-all, by the way. And one of the things that happens when students get in the diet and weight area is that people say, oh, great, you know, all I have to do is tap these points and then I can eat anything I want. You know, I mean, this will do it. This is magic.
That sounds so like our culture.
Well, it is. You know, it's sort of like give me a pill so that I don't feel the pain so I can keep doing
sure
the thing that that causes the pain.
Simple, it must work.
Yeah. So it's sort of like I want to have my cake and eat it too, you know. So I want to have my cake and eat it too and not gain weight. Okay. So at any rate, the hypothalamic reset, what happens here is that sometimes that thermostat's gotten bumped. The body has been so overweight for so long that it's just said, well, my normal weight, I mean, can't be any less than 200. Okay? So right now, they actually are bouncing against that limiter, and the body says, I don't care how little you eat, I don't care how much you exercise, you're going to weigh 200 pounds because that's what it says on this thermostat here. Now, a lot of times those thermostats get messed up because of continual abuse overrides, like the springs on a scale that get weaker and weaker and weaker because we just stress them out, okay? But also they get really bumped for people who do dieting.
Yo-yo.
You know, the yo-yo stuff, okay? Great, so I'm heavy, I'm light, I'm heavy, I'm light, and the body finally just kind of gives up and it gets stuck somewhere. You know, I sort of lost track of what's real in there because there's so much going on and there's so much emotional content to all of this that so you got a weight set that's off. So what happens then, and by the way, I'm using this now specifically in relation to diet and weight, but it can be used in relationship to anything, and I'll talk about that in just a minute or two. So if it is appropriate, and that's what you need to do, find out is it appropriate, or it is appropriate to check the hypothalamic reset points, okay? And now the hypothalamus, I think, is one of the points on your on the checklist. So I have those hypothalamic resets. It will show up that way as well on your checklist, on your balancing checklist that I gave you. It's called hypothalamic resets. If that comes up, there, don't automatically assume it's weight because it could be resetting for emotion. It could be resetting for a lot of other things, okay? But what happens is, as long as it's appropriate, so I'm back to my person who comes in at 200 pounds, okay? I'll muscle test them. So it's appropriate to check the hypothalamus. Yes, it is. Okay, good.
Are there other things you would check besides the hypothalamus?
No, I want to know if it's appropriate to check it.
So is that not sort of assumed by the fact that
it's sort of assumed, but I'm gonna double check.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just me, and it is assumed by the fact that it comes up. But then you'd have to say, well, if diet and weight comes up, if hypothalamic resets come up, then you've got to find out it's appropriate to check hypothalamus for weight. It's appropriate to check it for emotion.
That makes sense because you have a lot of choices.
Yeah. But here, if it's diet and weight, there's a lot of pieces. There's educational components to that. So it may not be a hypothalamic issue. I tied in the hypothalamus with this because that's where you'll probably use it the most. But that's not directly. I mean, the hypothalamic reset is only part of the whole diet and weight material that's there.
Okay, so you might say it's appropriate to check the hypothalamus for diet and weight?
Yeah, for weight.
Okay. For
Wait, that's the direction we're going right now is you're checking. Got diet and weight.
We've got diet and weight.
See if hypothalamic resets are the way to go about it.
Yeah.
In the other column of the priority checklist, you start with hypothalamic resets and you check diet and weight along with anything else that may or may not be an issue.
Right. So when
what are some of the other things that you would be likely to go with?
Okay. So in diet and weight?
No. In hypothalamic resets.
Okay. So let's stay with diet and weight for the moment. Okay. Let's stay with that. Because on the diet and weight, and when you find the material in there, there are some educational things, there's some visualizing things, you know, like visualizing, you know, yourself naked in a mirror, you know, and muscle test them, okay? They need to clear up that picture so it's not stressful, you know, visualize your ideal weight, you know, that's stressful, you need to clear up that picture, okay? You know, and so on. There's lots of things educationally. There's also about eating patterns and stuff. So people can, you can muscle test those and see if there's stuff that needs to be cleared on the eating patterns. You always get emotions. You always, you know, do frontal occipital or ESR, and there are little processes in there. But it's a whole workshop area. Okay. So I'm gonna take that right now. I'll leave that to you in the big workbook to play with those pieces. But I'm going to take it from the hypothalamic point of view right now, okay? So it's appropriate to do the hypothalamic reset. Yes, it is. Okay, now you check the point. Those are the set points that are on the face. Those are the meridian endpoints that are on the face. Okay? And you've got a picture of those, but it's the central, the governing, large intestine, the stomach, triple warmer, the bladder, I lost it, doesn't matter.
Small intestine and over here, I think there are two here, it's like triple warmer and
gallbladder, yeah. Anyway, they're on that picture on your face there, okay? You find out which one has stress. Because these meridian points on the face are the access points to the hypothalamus. These are how you kind of find the doorway into the hypothalamus.
Is this a priority check?
No, there's only going to be one.
There's only going to be one anyway.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah. So whichever one comes up, you just stop and use that. All right. Get an emotion, always. And now, depending on how much you can stay out of the process, or how much you trust, or what your client needs, and so on and so on, you can actually test to find out what the hypothalamus is currently set at. So the person, you know, comes in, they weigh 200 pounds. The hypothalamus is currently set over 200. Yes or no? No, it's not. Currently set at between 195 and 200. No, currently set at 190 to 195. Yes, okay, 191, 192, 193, 193. Okay. So you find out where it's currently set. So you can actually find it. And usually, by the way, it's going to be set right about where they weigh. I mean, that's the way it works. We have a self-regulating mechanism. So it's going to be someplace usually in that area. Then the second thing you can do, and this gets tricky in here, because we get invested in the degree that we trust our muscle testing or don't trust my muscle testing, all those kinds of things. You know, I mean, I have thoughts about when I do this. But you can muscle test to find out what the appropriate weight set ought to be. This is not their ideal weight when they were 18 and they're fittest and their best shape in the whole wide world, okay? This is what it's appropriate to set it at right now. It might be appropriate, by the way, I'm just telling you all these things right now, it might be appropriate to set the hypothalamus at 190 because that's as big a jump as the body can handle right now, okay? So you can go through, so it's appropriate, so the hypothalamus ideally should be set for under 200, yeah. Under 190, yeah. Under 180, no. Okay. Under 185, yeah. Okay. 184, 183, okay. 183. So you can find out where it needs to be set. And it might be, by the way, that it goes all the way down and says, no, it ought to be set at 160. That's where you're supposed to, you know. I don't know. And you don't want to make these things up, and you don't want to get the person all so fixated on, you know, but I need to lose 40 pounds. And, you know, I mean, who cares what you need to lose? We're looking at how can we help your body help you. Okay, so you find out where it needs to be set or where it's ideally set right now, and then you tap those points. You tap, 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 tap. Whichever ones were weak. You found the hypothalamic reset, you found the meridian points, the hypothalamic points on the face. You then go back out, you find out what the weight set is currently. Then you find out what the ideal weight set is, and then we did get an emotion someplace in there. And then you tap. Whatever those points are, you tap. It's just tap, 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 tap for like 20, 30 seconds. So what you're doing is you're using that access point, whatever the access point is you found on the face there, using that access point to go in to the hypothalamus with the express mission of noticing where the hypothalamus is set right now for weight and helping it to wake up and reset for what is more appropriate right now at this moment in time. Okay? At that point, you go back and test the hypothalamus and it's strong again. What you can do and what I would recommend that you do, if it's not strong, by the way, you tap it some more. Okay? What I'd recommend you do is you test that point, it's strong, put it in circuit. Put the point in circuit. Because, I was going to say sometimes, many times, just tapping the hypothalamic reset points will not do everything that needs to be done. So we tap the hypothalamic points, but then if you're comfortable, you put it in circuit, it's strong. Now you go through and you do finger modes. You do whatever comes up on your finger modes because all of that is supporting the hypothalamic reset. And this, by the way, is true. I'm talking now really specifically about hypothalamic resets. Whatever you're resetting for, it doesn't really matter, okay? You get the reset point strong, you put it in circuit, and you go through your finger modes, and you see if there's anything else that needs to be done. At worst, by the way, if you really don't want to do finger modes, doesn't matter, at least put it in circuit and go through the behavioral barometer, noticing the emotion, then go through it again, notice the emotion, feeling this, wanting to feel more of that, check it, notice the emotion, feeling this one, and get whatever layers of emotion there are on that. So that's the minimum to do to support that hypothalamic reset. And again, it doesn't matter what you're resetting it for. It's just getting any other emotional baggage out of the way to help that be more solid in there.
When you say the layers of emotion, I'm losing that
great
part.
Great. So come on up here with me. I'll just do it with you. I'm talking a lot. I'm not demonstrating a lot. But so let me come up and
demonstrate me.
I'll demonstrate you. Okay? So you're holding that?
Yeah.
That's how it happens. Alright. So she's asking about layers of emotions and what it means. Okay? So we're getting layers of emotions on your misunderstanding about layers of emotions. Okay?
Cool.
Or
got
about
it.
Whatever's going on right now. Okay?
Right.
So conscious, subconscious, body. Okay? Mm-hmm. Attunement and difference, one, separation, oneness, separation, uncared for, unacceptable, unimportant, feeling unimportant, wanting to feel more unified.
Mm-hmm.
Notice, by the way, I put her arm down. It's a little technique that I do. I put her arm down. I tell her, feeling unimportant, wanting to feel more unified. I lift her arm back up. I go, unimportant, unified. Those are clear. Good. Conscious, subconscious. Okay, something subconscious.
What, see, I just missed that.
Okay.
Okay, so I got to the where wanting to feel more unified.
Right.
So we got there. Okay.
All I'm doing now, remember, when you find these emotions, noticing and letting go. So all I did is I gave you a moment to notice. I just said, feeling unimportant, wanting to feel more unified.
Right.
I came back up and I tested unimportant, unified, and they're strong.
Got
so
it.
Erased it. Now I'm going to go see if there's any more.
Okay.
So I went conscious,
okay,
subconscious, I have that enthusiasm.
Oh, gotcha.
Story, strength, fear of loss, assurance, fear of loss, let down, bitter, disappointed. All right. Oh, I read it wrong. Disappointed, wanting to feel more bold. Okay?
Okay.
I had it in the wrong place,
got
but that's
it.
Okay. So, and I put her arm down when I said, I let it down gently,
good,
sorry. So, feeling disappointed, wanting to feel more bold. So, comes back up. Disappointed, bold, good, conscious, subconscious, body, human difference, one is separation, one is separation. Let's see what we have here. Uncared for. Uncared for, wanting to feel more quiet. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, uncared for, quiet, conscious, subconscious body, conscious, subconscious body, that's all clear.
Got it.
Three layers of emotion.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
So, what happens is you just kind of keep peeling the onion until there's nothing left.
Right.
And
it's the retesting and then going back through again. That's the retesting.
And I could, by the way, so I introduced that little, you know, kind of put her arm down, tell her the emotions, just to give a moment for her brain to process. It's not totally necessary, but it feels respectful, and it feels like I'm not leaving her with, you know, wow, this goes so fast, I'm just lost, I don't know what it, you know, because if she feels that way, she's not going to get the benefit. If she just totally trusts, then she'll get it anyhow. But
yeah,
this just makes it real easy to do, okay?
Yeah.
By the way, So I go through, usually by noticing and letting go. I mean, just noticing it disappears. But I went through conscious, subconscious, okay. So feeling disappointed, wanting to feel more bold. I lift her arm back up, feeling disappointed, wanting to feel more bold. Oh no, it's still stressful. Great. So it didn't just notice and release, did it? So what do I do? Yes, all. Run, lock, sit, pull, hold out. So just breathe for a minute. We'll just erase the rest of that. You don't have to talk about anything. Don't have to do anything. Just doing it. So 10, 20 seconds of that. Some people don't like things too quick, you know. So give them another 10 seconds. So, but then go back disappointed, bold. Okay, great. Then go back through. So if it ever still has a little stress, just do a little ESR. So you can always clear layers of emotion. Okay? So after we've done, I'll go back now, after we've done the hypothalamic set point, and we tap, you retest the set point, it is strong, you put that strong in circuit, and you at least go through and get layers of emotions. And that's probably the easiest, but if you're comfortable with it, go through your finger modes and see what else needs to be done. Or go through your short list of simple processes, or even checking out the habitual half dozen item by item, see if there's one of those. I mean, lots of little things you can play with, something else to support this. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Or just do a 14 muscle.
Yeah, and you could just put it in circuit and do a whole 14 muscle balance on that reset. I mean, if you really want to be thorough, that's an awesome way to do it. Okay.
Can you refresh ESR? I know that's something I know.
Emotional stress release.
Okay,
that's the frontal occipital holding, or ring finger and thumb, and the 2 points on the forehead here.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
if I put something in circuit, and say I'm going to do a 14-point balance.
Yeah.
What if I'm moving my feet around?
Okay. There's two ways to put it in circuit. One is muscle test, as it's going weak, you just spread your legs, you got it in circuit. That's the easiest way. But now, through 14 muscle balance, you got a whole bunch of things to do. The other way to put things in circuit is to zip them up the center of the forehead. So I've got it in circuit here. Number one, I could while I'm muscle testing them, I could do this. But that's a little bizarre. I mean, what are you doing, you know? So usually when I'm putting things in circuit,
zipping it up, baby.
You know, while it's test there, you know, I just move my feet a little bit there, and I've got it in circuit. But then when I move to get ready for that 14 muscle balance, as I bring my feet together, as I close that circuit, I zip it up in my forehead. And you can do that, again, very subtly, you know, like just turning to get something, you know, so like, you know, wiping your brow, but you're zipping it. Now I can move around the room.
now
I can do anything, and I've got to zip in. When I'm all done, I just zip it.
Let it go.
Let it go. Yeah. If not, it'll eventually disappear anyhow. It's no big deal. But I like to be thorough.
We zip it in, then everybody we deal with later in the day.
Yeah, we're still clearing that stuff. Yeah, hopefully you cleared it with the first person. But yeah, exactly. So
okay.
It's nice to clear the circuit. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
So yeah, that's two ways to put it in circuit there. Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. Now.
Did we reach the end of the hypothalamic reset process?
No, but you know what I'm going to do? Because this is a lot easier to do. So switching recordings here.